The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Two Chairs No Waiting, episode number 495, Hot Rod Otis, Professor Brower's Class. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at weaversdepartmentstore.com. Drop by over at Weavers, and you can see some of the great Mayberry things they got over there. One of them that you don't want to miss is the 2019 Andy Griffith Show wall calendar. So head over there and get yourself one. You also might want to check out the fishing hole stuff. There's all kinds of really cool fishing hole that Andy and Opie on there. One of them I really like is the fishing hole golf towel. So head over to weaversdepartmentstore.com and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode number 495 is Rebecca Spears. So thank you, Rebecca. She's one of our patrons over at Patreon. So if you really like what I do here on the podcast, head over there and think about supporting me. And who am I? I'm Alan Newsome, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting. It's great to have you here in Mayberry with me. It's always great to spend a little time talking about the Andy Griffith Show with you. It's just something I look forward to every week. I've been doing this for, 495 plus weeks, heading for 500, and we'll be there really soon. So it's really great to just, the Andy Griffith Show makes me laugh. It makes me smile, and we just have a great time with it. So this week, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about, the last few weeks we've been talking about Otis, right? Hal Smith. Well, it got me thinking about it. Was there anything in the bullet, the official newsletter of the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club? It used to be The Bullet, which is a paper version of the newsletter. Now it's the e-bullet. But this is the March 26, 1999 edition. And Professor Brower did a class, a write-up, a essay, I guess, on Hot Rod Otis, the episode of the Andy Griffith Show. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to hear from Randy Turner for This Week in Mayberry History. You're going to like. We got a couple of voicemails I'm going to hit you up with. And we're going to see and hear some stuff from Betty Lynn's birthday back in August, on August the 29th, from Ted Womack. So hopefully I'll get all that covered, and we'll get this show on the road so you guys can hear all of that. Let's get a little background music because we're going to have some reading music. So here's Mockingbird by the VW Boys, vwboys.com. Drop by. They're great guys. Thanks for letting me use your music. So here we go. Professor Brower's Class, ladies and gentlemen. So put your pencils down and just listen to the story. We got some great story here Neil put together. He does always put together a great, great story for us. So let's head over here and talk about it. This is Hot Rod Otis. All right. It begins with a quote. It says, "I began this script with Andy and Barney playing a game of gin rummy because it was a typical jailhouse pastime," says writer Harvey Bullock. The game also provided opportunity to have Otis advise Barney which card to play. Otis. Yeah, that's awesome. Otis did stuff like that all the time. Otis, poor advice that he gave resulted in an argument between the two of them and prevented what could have been a wordy opening scene from becoming terminally bland, said Hat. That's what Harvey said. Otis is somewhat unstable, even when sober, Harvey continues. So Hal Smith could play the character as broadly as he wished, at times even childlike. When Barney scraps with Otis, this childlike attitude rubs off on him, and he ends up arguing with Otis's terms and vernacular. He argues just like Otis. After the card game, Andy leads Otis to the sale. Before going to sleep, Otis asked to be awakened the next morning at 8 o'clock. You might remember that. The next morning, when Barney wakes Otis up at 8 a.m., Otis is surprisingly pleased. He asks Andy for a sip of his coffee and exits the cell and heads on. Oh, boy, Otis was out to the world, too. You'll remember that. So he exits the next morning there. Otis explains that today is the day he's going to buy something that he's always wanted and had his heart set on. You know, Andy and Barney question Otis about his purchase. But Otis wants to surprise them and refuses to say anything more. Otis's request for a sip of Andy's coffee was scripted, says Harvey. The request and Andy's compliance were intended to show how close Andy, Otis, and Barney were. The bond between the threesome explains why Andy and Barney went to such lengths later on. Harvey adds that Barney speculates that Otis's big purchase may have been a vacation to the natural bridge in Virginia, or to an alligator farm down in Florida. Both spots are among the most familiar, and to be frank, possibly the least exciting destinations to anybody but a Mayberryan. Later that morning, Andy and Barney's speculation was interrupted by the honking of car horn. The two step outside to find Otis seated in a newly purchased car. Oh my goodness. The prop department got an old, outdated car for Otis. It was his hot rod, says producer Aaron Rubin. The car stood out and seemed funnier than having a new, sleek vehicle. Barney feels Otis is now a mechanized drunk and he cannot just stand by and do nothing. While the town gets creamed off the map, Barney decides to call Otis in for a driving test. Now, this is one of my favorites. I love that. He gives a test with toy cars. We all saw that. I love it. Taking a driver's test with a toy car had many advantages, said Harvey Bullock. An outdoor test with a real car would necessitate Otis actually driving and would have required hours of production time and drivers and stunt drivers. With toy cars, I got the comic effect without the production woes and had a greater ease of dialogue between Otis and Barney than would have had in an actual car. With a real car, on the other hand, if he did pass, Barney spying on him later on, spying on Otis later in the episode, would have weakened because Otis has already demonstrated his driving ability. All of these problems were avoided with the toy cars. That was a vroom, vroom. You remember that? You might fit in yours, Barney, but I'll never fit in mine. I love that line, by the way. I'm sorry, I'm distracted thinking about this stuff. Let's see here. Where was I? I lost it because I started laughing. They were avoided, but the toy cars, which would never convince Barney that Otis could actually drive because they were using the toy cars. Harvey adds, the motor sound Otis made, vroom, vroom, that one, in the script, was in the script and grew out of the fact that when any red-blooded American picks up a toy car, he will make a motor sound without realizing it. Vroom, vroom. The sound will sometimes be loud, sometimes faint, depending on the person's sophistication. A mute sound when a toy car is picked up is the picker-upper indelibly and absolutely as a possessor of a questionable birth, if you do, and not a trace of wonder. So if you don't have any sound when you pick up a toy car, you have a questionable birth, according to Harvey. This is great. The driving test ends when Barney, totally frustrated by Otis's performance. After Otis leaves, Andy tells Barney, if it'll make you feel better, why don't you watch him for a while? Well, Barney's surveillance of Otis triggers many possibilities, such as Barney's camouflaged hat. You remember that? Barney was watching him and he had his camouflaged hat on, standing in the bushes. Harvey said that that it opened those possibilities, like his camouflaged hats. I also toyed with flashlight codes. Barney holding the glass to the side of Otis's house and the use of a flash camera and Barney hiding in Otis's car. He tried all those different things or thought about them. Barney relates the results of the surveillance and he discloses that Otis was spotted over at the County Line Cafe buying himself a bottle of Old Red Eye. Remember that? That's what he had done. That's what Barney said anyway. Otis then went over to Charlie Varney's place. Yep, into Charlie Varney's place. To get himself gassed, said Barney. After Barney shares this information with Andy, the two go over to the Varney residence to check on Otis. Otis staggers out. I keep getting distracted because I'm looking at the... Sorry, folks. Otis staggers out of the house and passes out beside his car. You remember that? I do. I remember that so much. Barney asks Andy if he can imagine what would have happened if Otis had gotten behind the wheel. After moments of reflection, Andy comes up with a way to fix it so Otis will never want to drive again. So Andy and Barney take Otis back to the courthouse. Oh, that's awesome. Remember, he was passed out. So they carry him back to the courthouse. Place him in his cell. And they douse him with water. When Otis comes to, he finds Andy and Barney wrecked into his driving through the railing into the river and drowned. The fake death story is a ageless standby, says Harvey. I don't recall any concern from Aaron Rubin, even though the county nurse, episode number 57, had a similar scene. I never saw that show, incidentally, and my approach must have varied enough that it didn't seem repetitive, said Harvey. The script, Harvey continues, stated that the speeches of Andy and Barney's staged Otis is dead performance, were to be delivered in a wooden overtone, innocent voice. Andy and Barney's amateur acting status was important to the scene. If their performance had been too polished, it would have reminded the audience that the characters were in reality portrayed by actors. So they would purposely poor Otis... To Otis, we shall meet, but we shall miss him. Harvey adds, I specifically requested that Andy and Barney sing The Vacant Chair. It was a song I had used when writing hero/villain melodramas for off-Broadway diners and drama houses back in the 50s, and it fit perfectly into the scene. Chair is what I asked for, and chair is what I got. Sung by the way, in great harmony by Andy and Barney. Otis is so moved by Andy and Barney's performance that he joins him in singing, we shall meet, we shall miss him. That was so awesome, by the way. He's crying and singing with him. He joins in singing, and eventually is overcome with grief and collapses on the bed. Taking advantage of the moment, Andy douses him again with water. Remember that? They had already finished their singing, and he douses him again with water. Andy then says to the startled Otis that he must have been having a nightmare. Otis promises Andy and Barney that he ain't never going to drive another car again so long as I live. you can get drowned that way. Then, when Barney asked Otis if his nightmare was a factor in his decision, Otis explains, "Oh, no, no. I sold my car to Charlie Barney before I even took the first drink." You remember that? The dream didn't have anything to do with that. Just another of those nutty nightmares. I have them all the time. Harvey concludes, the epilogue for this episode was more serious than most. And the humor arises from Barney's personality. You know, I had Barney tearful about Otis. He was about to cry. Even though the scheme worked and Otis is hale and hearty, Barney is still carried away. All the theatrics re-echo, and he can't shake it off. He goes in the back room to cry over the tragedy, which he knows never happened. So that is Professor Brower's class about that episode. Now, there's something else about that episode we didn't talk about yet. There were only, and I don't know if there's other episodes like this or not, but this particular episode, it's called, Hot Rod Otis. It's in season 4 of the Andy Griffith Show. There were only 3 people in the entire episode. Yeah, 3. Andy, Barney, and Otis, that's it. Nobody else was ever in this episode. I just think that's amazing. If you think about it, this one episode, there's only 3 actors for the entire episode. Doesn't it seem like there was somebody else there? I mean, I know it does to me, but anyway. So, folks, there you go. That is Professor Brower's class about Hot Rod Otis. Now, the neat thing there is we were hearing from Harvey Bullock, the writer who wrote that episode. Is that not amazing to get to hear him say things about why it actually happened? Like the motor sound. The motor sound Otis made, the Otis sounds that Otis made were requested in the script and grew out of the fact that any red-blooded American picks up a toy car, he'll make a motor sound without realizing it. Isn't that true? I mean, I'm not a young person anymore. And if you still give me a car, I'm going to be going around. Vroom, 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 vroom. Anyway, great writing. A absolutely amazing episode. Hot Rod Otis. Folks, that's in the Bullet, the newsletter. Now, if you go to Weavers, you can still buy back issues of the Bullet until they're all gone. There are still some. There's a lot that aren't in print anymore, but Weavers still has a whole lot of these. So if you would like to read, because there's a lot of stuff in here that is also still, it's timeless. There's so much stuff in here, it's timeless. There's a great article in this particular one about Ken Berry. I don't know. I honestly don't know if this episode or this one, March 26, 1999, is still available. But there is so much stuff in here. Remembrances of past things. There's cast and crew news, including stuff about Don Knotts, Betty Lynn, everybody, all the cast and crew. There are things called Emmett's Fix-It Shop Talk. Those are in these. Then you would not want to miss those. Those are usually trivia or answers to trivialities. Questions and stuff. It's great stuff in here. So if you don't have the e-bullet or the Bullet, check out Weavers and look at the back issues and you can order your own. All right, guys, let's go ahead and hear from Randy Turner with This Week in Mayberry History, but stick around because we got some stuff after that that I know you're going to enjoy as well. Randy's report is amazing. I didn't know any of this stuff. So Randy, take it away.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
Roy Barcroft may not be a name you recognize, but he had a career of more than 40 years with hundreds and hundreds of appearances, including a short but memorable one in Mayberry. Roy was born on September the 7th, 1902 in Nebraska to a farming family. In 1917, he lied about his age and enlisted in the Army during World War I at the age of 15. He was sent to France, where he was wounded in action, leading to his discharge at only 16 years of age, only 1 year into his 3-year commitment. He worked a number of odd jobs after that, including as a ranch hand, but unable to find steady work, he re-enlisted in 1923 and was stationed in Hawaii for 3 years. After his second discharge, he first went to Chicago and played clarinet and saxophone in local dance bands before moving to Los Angeles in 1929. He at first worked as a salesman and performed in local stage productions on the side, in part at least because he thought it would improve his voice and thus his ability to sell. In 1931, Roy heard a film studio was looking for extras who had served in the military for use in the upcoming Greta Garbo film, Mata Hari. He made his film debut as a soldier in that movie. For the first 7 years of his acting, Roy had only uncredited roles in films and movie serials. He was an extra in the 1936 Cliffhanger series, Flash Gordon, the serial that was one of George Lucas's inspirations for Star Wars. The following years, he was an extra as a soldier in the film Join the Marines, and was again an extra as a soldier in the serial Dick Tracy. He had his first credited role later that same year as a soldier in another serial, SOS Coast Guard, starring Bela Lugosi. In 1938, he had his first role in the genre in which he would become best known as a character type that he would typically play. Roy was cast as a henchman in the Western Flaming Frontiers. For the next 5 years, while he did still appear in the occasional non-Western, including the serials Flash Gordon's Trip to Mars and Flash Gordon Conquers the Universe, most of his work was in films, such as The Man from Texas, Riders of Death Valley, and Riding Down the Canyon, often as a henchman. In 1943, Republic Pictures signed him to an exclusive 10-year contract, leading to his appearance in more than 150 films and serials for that studio. Film critic Leonard Maltin has called him Republic Pictures' number one bad guy. When his contract was up, and as B-Westerns were declining in popularity, he continued to appear in films for other studios and also made his television debut in 1953 in, what else, a Western series, The Adventures of Kit Carson. In 1954, he made his first of 8 appearances as different characters in Annie Oakley, starring Gail Davis, who would later play Thelma Lou's cousin. A year later, he became known for a good guy role, that of Colonel Jim Logan, the ranch owner in Disney's Spin and Marty series that aired as part of the Mickey Mouse Club. In 1955, he had a small role as the Marshal in the hit film version of the musical Oklahoma. In 1963, Roy appeared in Mayberry as Clint Biggers, who showed up just a bit too late looking for his pack of dogs, which Andy and Barney had just found homes for. In his later years, Roy shifted to playing sheriffs and marshals more than henchmen. In 1969, he made the last of 19 appearances in Gunsmoke as Roy, a recurring character he sometimes played in the series, who had his own name. Roy Barcroft passed away that same year, a working actor up to the end, with some credits and productions airing after his death. Throughout his career, people were often surprised to meet Roy. While his movie persona during most of his career was as the villain, he was a charming and immensely likable man. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. And remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
All right. Well, thank you, Randy. Thank you so much. And hey, folks, if you don't want to miss any of Randy's stuff he's doing online, send him an email at turnersgrade@gmail.com. It's turnersgrade@gmail.com to make sure you don't miss anything. He's got a lot going on, a blog. He's got some things he's going to be selling. So make sure you go to turnersgrade@gmail.com and send him an email. You will not regret it. Now, this particular, if you didn't recognize and didn't see what he was talking about, he's talking about Roy Barcroft, and he played Clint Biggers in the episode Dogs, Dogs, Dogs. Now, it was in season 3. It was the 30th episode that year. It's the 93rd episode of the Andy Griffith Show. So that was Clint Biggers. Now, if you don't remember him, it's because he was only in the very end of the episode where he came back to get the dogs. He showed up, and after Barney and Andy had given their dogs out to everybody else, he showed up to try to get his dogs back. So he was only on just a few minutes, but that's who he was. I had no information about him previously. So Randy, thank you so much for all of that. That was really great. All right. So now we're going to have an email. Now this email, I should set it up. Back in December, I asked folks to email me and send me pictures and stuff of their Mayberry things that they got for Christmas. Well, you know, I only got one. So I've been waiting, hoping that more people would send them to me. But, you know, it's September. I think it's time that we show and listen to this voicemail that I got from the only person who sent me a response to this particular thing, Wason. So let's hear from Wason Cooper about his stuff. And if you're on the video, you'll see pictures. I will post his photos of his stuff on our Facebook page as well, and there'll be a link in our show notes, okay? So he's going to be talking about some of his pictures, but here we go. We'll hear from Wason and show you some.
Hey, Alan, this is Wason Cooper from South Shore, Kentucky. We're the Cooper family. We've been Mayberry fans for years and years, and you said on your last podcast to send in any pictures of Christmas-related Mayberry items possibly we got for Christmas. So I began taking pictures of the past Christmas and the year before and the year before, and ended up having quite a few. Didn't realize I had as many as I did. I think I could start my own Mayberry museum here in South Shore, but I don't think I will. Anyways, we just would like to say that we really, really enjoy your podcast. We download them and listen to them on trips when we go to town and go on vacation and elsewhere. But I hope you enjoy it. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Wason, thank you so much for taking the time to do that. He had all kinds of stuff. He even has the sheet music for Juanita. Nita, Juanita. He's got a candlestick phone. He's got CDs. He's got all kinds of stuff there. So, Wason, thank you so much for taking time to call us and write in. And I have one other voicemail before we get to our final thing. And this is from Jeanette. I think you'll enjoy this.
This is Jeanette. I live in Fort Valley, Georgia. And I was calling about I love Andy Griffith's show. I watch it when I get home from work from a bad day. And it makes me feel real comfortable and real at ease. And yes, I often look at every one of their shows about 3 or 4 times over. And I have seen some black people on there. And I am an African American. And I enjoy the show. And I'm glad they still got it on air. And okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you, Jeanette. Thank you for taking time to call in. I believe she's probably referring to episode 119 of Two Chairs, No Waiting, where we talked about African-Americans in Mayberry. And that's probably what she's referring to going back. So it's always great to hear from folks. And I took some heat a little bit from some people, but in general, most people about that particular episode 119, African Americans in Mayberry, most people agreed. And I thank Jeanette because I much value an African American's opinion about whether there were African Americans in Mayberry much more so than I do my own. So I really appreciate that. So thank you. Thank you for taking the time to call me. I really do appreciate it, and have a great week over there in Georgia. All right. So next up, we have just a little bit of stuff here. Now, this is from Ted Womack. Now, you're not going to be able to see it unless you're watching the video, but it is, well, we have some pictures too. I'll post the pictures, and they're from Ben. Ben posted these. We have pictures of Betty's birthday. Betty Lynn had her birthday. It was her 92nd birthday back on August the 29th. And Ted sent in a great video of just when they were singing Happy Birthday to Betty. So picture in your mind Betty Lynn sitting there at the table with a cake in front of her that says 92. 92, it says on it. So let's just hear this video. Crowd of the loaded goat down here in North Carolina singing to Betty.
Thank you all so much for being here. I'm really touched and thrilled. And a 92-year-old old lady like me, who's really been so good to me, I thank you. Make them get me. I wish all of you could have all the happiness that I have had on this day. Thank you.
She's blowing out the candles. And I believe you can hear her. I wish all of you could have the happiness that I have had on this day. Isn't that awesome? Betty is such a sweet and wonderful, wonderful person. Thank you, Ted, for sending the video along to us so that we could hear, if you're listening to the audio, or see, if you're watching the video, Betty blowing out her birthday cake. Now, that was at the Loaded Goat, as I was saying, in Mount Airy, North Carolina. It's one of her, she loves that restaurant. She likes to go there. And I do too. It's a great, great restaurant. And the Loaded Goat. So check that out when you're in Mount Airy. Well, folks, I believe I didn't forget anything tonight. Almost every week I've forgotten something. Now, I do have a voicemail from Paul Mulick, but we're going to cover that next week. Because he's correcting some of the trivia that we did a couple of weeks ago. He's correcting a couple of things, minor, but they're good. I'm glad he sent it to us. So we'll be hearing that next week, and I'll have the clips to confirm what he actually said, because he is right. He's Paul. Paul's a trivial expert. So, folks, hey, I really want to thank you for being here. I couldn't do this without you. If you didn't show up and make me feel like I need to be here, I'd be talking to myself. So it's always great to hear from you. I would love to hear from you, just like I did those voicemails there. Give me a call at 888-684-8415. Or you can drop by over to twochairsnowaiting.com and click the contacts button there. And it's got all kinds of information, including the phone number, that you can contact me. I would love to hear from you. Folks, thank you for all you do to keep Mayberry alive. And get out there and tell people about the podcast, about the websites, all this stuff, and share some of the Mayberry spirit. And we'll see you next time right here on Two Chairs No Waiting.